when the stories of our lives get rough, when they get complicated, when they take twists and turns we never expected, we have to remember to still keep paying attention, to still be mindful, to still open our eyes and ears to the wonders of the earth all around us with its beauties, its joys, and know that we are part of its story, not separate from it. Let us open our eyes now. Open our ears and take in the wonder of the earth and all its gifts. I'm weary and my story has become frayed. When I don't know how it will turn out. And I'm not always sure I want to read the next chapter. I try to pull back a moment and see all there is. And in so doing, I am reminded of all that can be. Let us be in touch with our greater selves and our connection to each other and the earth.
The Coming of the Gentle People, a traditional Cherokee story. They say that if you go out into the woods and hear some music or some people talking, but don't see anyone around, you might have caught a glimpse of the gentle people, the Nunehi. One time, the Nunehi came to the Cherokee people and told them, "You're going to have to come with us now. All of you, pack up your belongings, and in 7 days, you will have to come and live with us." "But why?" the people asked. Where are we going? Why do we have to leave? Because, they said, something terrible is going to happen, worse than any flood or famine that you have ever known before. You have to leave to save yourselves. So they packed up their belongings and followed the Nanehi for miles until they came to a big stone way deep in the mountains. As they watched, the stone rolled away, and they rushed to see what was inside. It was a beautiful place. The air seemed to dance with joy. So without even thinking, many families rushed in. As they turned to close the door forever, they saw a group standing away in the back. The chief asked them, "Why aren't you coming in? We're ready to close the door." But the people said, "We were born here, and no matter what happens, we want to stay." The chief was torn. He wanted to go in, but he also wanted to be with his people. He decided he needed to stay and help lead his people. The stone rolled back, and the people who stayed were the ancestors of today's tribe. Those other people have never been heard from again. Though they say, if you're out in the woods, you might hear some music or some people talking. It's the Nunehi, and they're reminding us that they are always with us.
There's a Hopi proverb that says, "The one who tells the stories rules the world." History has shown that it has been those who have settled in the places where indigenous people once thrived who have gotten to tell the story of colonization their way. Columbus Day and the American myth of cowboys and Indians speaks very little of all that was here before. The rich cultures, the cities, the religions, the languages. Indigenous People's Day is a day of honoring those who, despite the odds, still exist in the 310 reservations where many of America's poorest 1% live. So that proverb is often correct, that the one who tells the stories rules the world. We know, too, that sometimes stories don't end the way we would like. The confirmation of Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court is one such instance for many of us. We find ourselves asking, is this really the way the story is being told? And perhaps that question means there will be energy to challenge who tells the stories and thus who rules the world, because there are other stories available to us, and it's those stories that aren't told that are often the ones we need most, even if we don't realize it. A few years ago, at another church I served, the congregation had just come off a year-long class on the intersection of science and the spirit. Now, the topic appealed to a good portion of that congregation, a pretty intellectual bunch, not too dissimilar from this one, who enjoy discussing how the latest scientific breakthroughs affected our understanding of ourselves at our deepest levels. Weekly attendance consisted of 50, 60 people. So for the following year, our plan was to teach a class about the power of stories. We would explore different kinds of stories from diverse cultures, from creation stories to fairy tales to contemporary stories of hope. We eagerly gathered together multiple sources for a vast range of stories, including those of indigenous people, stories that spanned human history. People love stories, we said. The class was an assured success. And the night of the first class, nobody came. Well, hardly anyone. But compared to the preceding year's science class, the number of attendees was disappointingly small. Why is this, we wondered. Perhaps part of it can be traced back to our still very strong Unitarian roots, those early rational thinkers who went against the tide during a muddled cultural time of superstition and suspicion. Back when we were still part of a Protestant faith tradition, we questioned whether those miracle stories in the Bible had any truth in them, whether Jesus turned water into wine or Moses parted the Red Sea. In place of the centrality of all these stories in our faith tradition came an emphasis on doing, engaging in the world in ways that affirm the central tenets of all religious traditions, that universal imperative to love one's neighbor. We did so by standing up to all kinds of isms, from sexism to racism. And perhaps, somewhere in all that focus on reason and action, we lost a little bit of touch with the power of stories to inspire, transform, and heal. Now, rationalists can naturally be suspicious of stories. They want to know whether stories are true stories or not, and that can sometimes miss the complex reality of a story's meaning. As Sio Tonka, John Two Hands of the Oglala Lakota Sioux tribe, said, "I cannot tell you the dreamy Indian story of your imagination simply because I am not imaginary, and my story is no dream." For him, a story is both personal but also real in its truth, truth that may differ from another person's perspective. An old Native American proverb says, "It takes 1,000 voices to tell a single story." Now, I take that to mean that until a story is shared and retold, it has not really been told. The value of stories is in the listening and the telling, not the holding and the keeping. Stories are a communal act, a way of bringing community together, of being in a place with one another. Stories can be used to oppress and obliterate, as much of the American mythos has done to our understanding of Native people, or the way women's stories of abuse have been denied for so long under the silencing hand of patriarchy. But stories can also be used to shape a culture's way of being for the better. Now consider not just the content of stories we share, but how we tell the story. And I'll put my spouse on the spot, because I like to do this. He gives me kind of a wild card for this, twice a year I get during the sermon. But whenever he's excited about something here at UUCF, which is often, he talks to me about our congregation. Whenever he gets a little disgruntled, once in a blue moon about something, it suddenly becomes your congregation, my congregation. Well, how we tell the story matters, right? What struck me in doing research for today's service is that each Native American culture here in the United States has stories of its own, creation stories, stories that explain how something works, stories that reflect the tribe's history and beliefs. But the commonality is that all these stories help the community better understand its best self. Contrary to popular opinion, many ancient peoples knew the metaphorical power of stories. They didn't necessarily believe them as we would today understand scientific fact, but instead saw them as a sort of best answer to life's big questions. The ineffable power of sharing metaphorical stories has historically been universally understood by human beings and can be found in every culture. An example, personal example. One October, when I was in fifth grade, I went to camp. It was a big deal being away from home, staying in a cabin in the woods, hiking along trails with Indian names and learning Native outdoor skills and cooking techniques. And at night, once the sun set, we sat around a campfire and told ghost stories. Now, the stories were often scary, slightly scary, befitting of Halloween, which was coming up, but they were more often silly. Most were fairly simplistic and rather crudely told. Being the sometimes obnoxiously precocious kid I was, I remember thinking how juvenile some of these stories were, certainly not something I would have wasted my time on when I was back home. But I was thoroughly enjoying myself anyway. Something about that flickering campfire and the canopy of stars overhead made me almost believe I could see the shadowy figures of ghosts and witches through the trees. And I realized in that moment, it wasn't the stories themselves that mattered so much, but the communal telling of them, the sharing of that space and time. The stories weren't really about ghosts and witches at all. They were about us being together in that space, The emphasis on the oral tradition of storytelling among Native cultures invites us to consider what communal activity we have replaced this age-old pastime with. Certainly watching TV at home or on our computer or phone screens, it seems like we've lost something in that translation. Movie watching? Communal in some ways, but lacking the interactive quality of campfire stories unless you get together afterwards to discuss it with your friends. Native cultures, whether by circumstance or intention, were onto something of value in the way their stories drew their people together. But it's important we don't romanticize the life of indigenous people who actually built complex and sometimes problematic societies, far more complex than just people sitting around a campfire. And certainly the struggles Native peoples face today are great. Poverty, alcoholism, and the desperate attempt to hold on to cultures that are being bombarded from all sides. It'd be a shame, though, if we as a human race lost their wisdom. Wisdom we've heard in stories this morning. The buffalo rock and its song had to be sung by a community. And that reminds us that we create a rescue story not alone, but from people working together. The Cherokee story of the two wolves. Which wolf will you feed? That reminds us that whatever story we privilege, good or evil, will be the story that we live. The Cherokee story shared in today's reading shows us the importance of committing to creating an ongoing story with a community, even when we are lured by a siren song into a different story altogether. In these stories, we find not literal truths, but truths of human experience, ways of understanding ourselves that touch our spiritual lives. And across the many Native stories emerges the theme of the importance of the integration of the human spirit with the physical realities of nature. You know, I think this interactive story of our harmonious coexistence with the simple truths of nature, that's one of the things so often missing from our current age. We are inundated with the opportunity for facts. We have more facts at our fingertips than ever before. We don't have to know anything. We can look it up in a moment's notice. But what has our internet become equally filled with? Lies and distortions, half-truths and news that's called fake news, while real fake news is called fact. I mean, who can even figure out what I just said? Meanwhile, the reality of the wind rustling the trees has always been and always will be true. Perhaps part of our problem is that we've forgotten the practice of thoughtful storytelling as part of meaning-making, of reminding us who and what we are, and how we are connected to each other and everything about us. And so we take our supposed reliance on facts and twist those stories so we can make meaning in our empty lives. Perhaps we as a culture need to sharpen our critical thinking skills even as we invite back in the potent imagery of metaphorical stories into our lives. In other words, perhaps we have traded art for facts, but now the ever-present human need for art compels us to shape fact into art, thus losing truth somewhere in the midst of all these permutations. Our contemporary privileging of written history and written sacred texts differs greatly from those whose land this once was. For the Native peoples, the oral tradition of the community was key. For them, sacred knowledge resided in the elders who had heard the stories of previous generations. I like this concept of sacred knowledge as the result of listening to the stories of those who have come before. Would that our current politicians would take that approach, lest we are doomed to repeat some of humanity's most disastrous mistakes. And what can we learn from Native stories? The European worldview is built around time as its central concept, while the indigenous worldview is built around place and being as the central focus of meaning-making. Stories told through the lens of time and dates can be important indeed, but perhaps that stops us sometimes from seeing the whole picture, can cause us to miss out on some deeper truths that maybe aren't so easily quantified. I think of all the women, and some men too, who have been emboldened in the last weeks and months to finally tell stories that they have held close to their hearts, often with a great deal of pain, but being released now by the current national conversation on sexual misconduct. While we have seen through the televised hearing that some may demand stories be remembered primarily in terms of facts and details, the human mind and heart often remembers stories as it will, making them no less true. This is our gift and our flaw as human beings. Now, I'm not talking today about how we determine what stories are factually true. That's a whole other lecture. But I'm talking about how we honor the stories that move us, that shape individual lives and sustain community bonds. And in the metaphor and the nuance of stories, in their psychological insights, we find reflections of ourselves, of humanity, and the more reflections we examine, the more we understand ourselves. There's a Lumbee proverb that says, "See wisdom, not knowledge." Knowledge is of the past. Wisdom is of the future. That's what good stories do. Their mythical elements are ultimately timeless, designed to be reinterpreted again and again across the shifting sands of time and culture, speaking to us wherever we are, inviting us forward to wherever we will someday be. Indigenous stories are of connection to the earth, of community, of cooperation, and also of pain and suffering in the face of great oppression. But their stories are also stories of resilience. For Indigenous peoples are still here, still telling their stories and inviting us to listen and retell them. In so doing, we might also hear the stories of our own hearts and the heart stories of others. History has shown, and it's showing us right at this moment, that the powers that be don't always listen to these hard stories. Our imperative is then to keep telling those stories that would otherwise be silenced. And in so doing, we create new stories of hope, resilience, and most of all, possibility.